Well, it's been exciting, exhilarating, in fact, to see the Occupied Boston program develop and spread, and from what I can see, to see the directions it's been moving. There's no question that the country desperately needs something like this, not just protest against the pretty awful things that are happening, but some ideas and proposals and suggestive, constructive proposals about how to organize to achieve a very different kind of world. And there's not a lot of time to do it, so the fact that this is beginning to happen here, you know, Wall Street, a couple other places, has a lot of potential and significance, could turn the country around. So it's real exciting to watch. I'll try to come if I can manage somehow, but you know what my schedule is like. It's hard to find 5 minutes to make a telephone call. Yeah. But I will try to work it in somehow.
This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program.
That was Noam Chomsky leading off the hour with his takes on the Occupy movement, talking about Occupy Boston in particular. That recording was from earlier on in the movement before it was variably attacked, I guess you could say, or taken down. Evictions across Canada and, of course, in New York happening Tuesday morning. Police came in under the cover of darkness and tore down some tents. This is Loopholes on CFBX 92.5. You're listening to Chris Albanetti and
Jay Michie.
And how are you guys doing? Playing a little, if you recognize it, Angela, the theme from Taxi by Bob James. Always my calming tune for the first heavy snowfall.
Want to take a taxi home today. I don't want to ride that bike I rode.
Yeah, no kidding.
To school today.
So we've got a couple topics to talk about today. We want to recognize that this week, the November 13th to the 19th, is National Restorative Justice Week. I mentioned last week that I was attending the National Restorative Justice Symposium. This year's symposium, which was held in Kamloops this year by all accounts. We're fortunate enough to have it here and host it here. And so I got to attend that. I was there Monday and Tuesday. So I want to just update you guys on what I learned, a few of the interesting things and some shocking things that I heard from people while I was there. I think I could say fair enough that I got a certain gauge on what the attitude might be towards the upcoming Bill C-10 that is being tabled, the Omnibus Crime Bill that the Conservatives have going. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Maybe talk a little bit about what's happening with Occupy movements, maybe. Play some good music for you, keep you warm, keep you toasty on a on what looks like a chilly day from outside our window. And of course, banter, mustaches.
Yep. I definitely spoke enough last week. I went on a bit of a rant. We were talking about the Compassion Club and the search performed like on the Compassion Club here in Kamloops last. Go back to November 1st, and the resulting legal drama that is arising from that incident. I think we exhausted that topic.
We'll
have to come back to it later on if and when charges are ever laid on this. And
absolutely, that's what radio is for, updates. Radio is live, radio is happening now. Radio, I find, comparative with the law, is always current. The law is written to be always as if it's written to be present, so that everything applies in the present, and radio is too. So, lots to cover today. Loopholes, CFBX's legal radio show. No, Legal talk.
Legal talk. Legal talk. Law talk. Politics.
Banter.
Current events. No advice.
No advice.
Legal advice dispensed on this show.
That is one of the key things. Yeah, that's the first loophole, as we always like to say.
And we retain the right to make all kinds of errors in the information we provide. We don't try to, but that may have happened already, and certainly will happen going forward. We do our best.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to let the rest of Bob James play out. Enjoy some of that. We'll be back with some goodness. Stay tuned. Mitchie.
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
I'm all right, Chris. How are you?
I'm getting caught up finally.
It's been too long.
It has been. We were discussing this actually over, what was it, text message or email? Some kind of digital...
some kind of social media thing.
Yeah, one of those. How it's been a long time since we saw each other. We had a long weekend. We didn't see each other over the weekend, and I didn't get to see you Monday or Tuesday.
You were not feeling well.
And I must mention that in those 5 days it was that I hadn't seen you, your mustache has obtained status.
Yeah, thank you.
Fairly adult status, I would say.
Back at you, Chris. Back at you.
Jay and I are both, as you can't tell from this radio, this being radio, but Jay and I are both engaging in the Movember, as they call it.
You might hear my whiskers rubbing up against the microphone.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do that.
But you were not feeling good. We were going to go to the Remembrance Day ceremony together on Friday.
That's right. We were going to remember.
You and the family were down for the count.
Yeah, I was going to wear my white poppy.
You have a white poppy.
I used to have a white poppy from Quebec, but
I don't know. I'm happy to report that we did go down to the ceremony on Friday for Remembrance Day down at Riverside Park, and it was a very... very solemn ceremony. You never say it was a great ceremony. Very solemn ceremony. The bagpipes always have an effect on me. But then the color guard and the whole thing, and it's quite a moving ceremony. I had two grandfathers that were in the war, and it's always good that time of year to remember.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. So I guess we started off the show talking a little bit about how this is National Restorative Justice Week, and I recently attended the National Restorative Justice Symposium.
I was going to ask you some questions about that.
I think we should. But before that, because it's really hard to sum up this core idea of restorative justice, and really restorative justice is best told with a story, with a real life story. So I've actually pulled this up. This is from an archives of Red Eye Co-op Radio out of Vancouver. Our friends over there at Co-op Radio, and I pulled up this interview that they did with talking to Camilla Weaver. This is Lisa Moore from Red Eye Co-op Radio talking to Camilla Weaver. And just to give you a little bit of background, Camilla was assaulted in the street by a group of young people, and after the trial and the sentencing, she felt very dissatisfied with the outcome. This experience started her on a journey to develop a community-based restorative justice program. So for her, her account of it, and this is actually from 2005, like I mentioned. So keep in mind that restorative justice, as an idea, as a movement, has really taken some ground. So since then, and as was reflected in this conference I went to. So we're going to play a little bit about this interview for you. so that you can hear her tell it in her own words and hear a little bit about what restorative justice is. Then we'll come back and talk about what I learned.
A 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The term restorative justice may be familiar to people as a process associated with the courts or the criminal justice system. A group in East Vancouver is interested in developing a very local form of restorative justice, one that might respond to certain kinds of crimes but also be used in a broader attempt to resolve family or neighborhood conflicts. Some key principles are the involvement of all stakeholders, direct accountability for harmful actions, the healing of both victims and community, and the reintegration of the offender. Vancouver East Restorative Justice is working toward developing a vision and wants to involve a wide range of community members in the process. I'm joined in the studio by Camia Weaver of Vancouver East Restorative Justice. Good morning, Camia.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
So the project that you're involved in is in its formative stages. How is this community-based approach different than the program that exists now as part of the criminal justice system in BC?
Well, there is some form of restorative justice, it's called restorative justice, available through the court system. It's a post-court process where probation officers act as restorative facilitators either before sentencing or as part of sentencing, as required as part of sentencing. This is a very different animal that we're talking about. This is not built by the government, it's built by the community. And so the form it takes is by the community, for the community, and it's all conducted by members of the community. So it's community-based, community-involved, and does not deal with the court process at all, unless at some point maybe we'll get some referrals there.
So you were involved in an incident in which you were assaulted on Commercial Drive. What happened to you?
Well, one evening a friend and I were out on the street, and there was a group of youth blocking the sidewalk, and they had been around a lot lately, causing some difficulties, and I sort of decided that I didn't want to walk in the street, so I started to walk through, make my way through them, when one of them, a female, pushed me and swore at me and was being aggressive, and my friend pushed her back, and at that point some of the youth pushed him down and started basically stomping on his head and kicking him, and I tried to stop that from happening and was thrown down and smashed my wrist. So it was an unpleasant experience.
So then, as a victim of criminal wrongdoing, what was your experience in the legal process that ensued from there?
Well, it's a very frustrating process. I have been a criminal lawyer, and I understand the process. I know the people involved, and even for me, it was incredibly difficult. I mean, I thought that I may have had a better way through the system, but even with my connections, it wasn't any better. It was a very long, drawn-out process, and I wrote victim impact statements that specifically requested restorative justice, and I told Crown Counsel I wanted restorative justice because it makes more sense to me, and it has not happened. It was like 14 months from beginning to end, and nothing restorative happened at all.
And has there been any follow-up since then from the court to
no.
you?
No, in one of the cases with the youth, the judge would not let me read my victim impact statement, had no interest in pursuing any of that at all. There was one recommendation from one judge in adult court that a restorative process happen as part of sentencing, but it has not been pursued by the courts or probation.
It seems to me that your experience probably is not atypical of what many victims experience when they get involved in criminal court cases. Why do you think the system of legal response fails to really provide solutions for conflict in a community?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. One is that basically in criminal law, the state takes over the victim's position, really. The victim is really only a witness. It's the state who in our legal system has been offended or harmed, and so the state takes over. The prosecutors become the person pursuing it against the person who did harm, and the victim is nowhere in sight, really, unless they happen to be a witness. It's a very alienating process. There's never any direct contact between someone who has harmed and the person that they've harmed, unless, you know, there is no direct contact, no healing. There's just a process where there are all sorts of, the legal system stands in between the two, and in the end, it's punishment.
Restorative justice provides an alternative approach that involves all of the stakeholders in a process of healing. How would that sort of process look in practice?
Well, it comes in many forms. There's a victim-offender mediation, which is a post-sentencing process. The ones that we are more interested in are at the front end, and one of the most common is to have a facilitated conference where the person who was harmed, known as the victim usually, and the person who did the harm come together, with each of them having supporters and potentially community members, to discuss what happened and to talk about what the impact was or what the effect on people was, so that the person who harmed gets to hear what actually happened to people as a result of what they did, and that the person who harmed also can talk about why it happened, what they were thinking, what they were doing, why it happened. And then there's a resolution where everybody involved in that conference comes to an agreement about what needs to be done to heal the harm that happened.
So what are the benefits of a restorative approach for all of the people involved?
Well, you know, the alienating process of legal, the legal system, keeps people apart. And in this process, actually for an offender, it's a chance to say, yes, I did something wrong, and actually to get forgiveness for it, which is something that doesn't happen in the criminal justice system. And so you don't, I think for offenders or persons who harm, it's a way for them to get past that event and move on in a healthier way. For a victim, it's a chance to actually get closure, because they have a chance to say, this is what you did to me, and this is the effect it had on my life. And that's something that victims very rarely get a chance to do in any kind of direct way. And so it builds relationships between those parties and the other parties involved in the conference, but it also extends beyond that, because it really is a community building thing as well. Because the more you have good relationships, then the stronger your community is.
And what are the differences also in terms of how offenders are reintegrated into the community?
Well, in restorative justice, they're never out of the community. They're never taken away from the community, which is what they often do in the legal system. So they, in terms of repairing the relationship in the community, that can happen in a number of ways. One is just by that conference and rebuilding that relationship, and also in terms of some of the agreements involve doing community work or becoming more involved in the community, so that the person who's harmed has more connections in the community and doesn't start down that road of alienation from the community. So we bring that person in and build their relationships in the community.
So when a crime takes place in the community, how could a community restorative justice process get initiated instead of a typical legal process?
Well, there's a number of ways. For example, if there was a shoplifting, a theft of some kind, it could actually even be brought by the person, the victim, to say, I want to deal with this way, we won't go to the police, we won't go to court. And that's true in conflicts too, that you can come directly. We also hope to reach the point where we will get referrals from police in our community, particularly the community policing center, that is before people are charged, to say, I think this would be a case where it'd be better to deal with it in a restorative way in the community than to go to court, because it works better.
The system obviously wouldn't be appropriate in all criminal cases. What do you think the conditions, what conditions would be necessary for it to work?
Well, restorative justice, I just want to say as an aside, restorative justice can be effective in every single type of case, including murder cases, post as part of sentencing or post-sentencing. For example, that's happened in Australia, New Zealand. It's also happened here. The murder that happened up in Squamish, and I have a terrible memory for names, but the man who was killed when he went to the New Year's party, he was killed by youth. That youth and the wife of the man who was murdered have had restorative process and actually have quite a relationship now. So it is possible at all stages. And now I've forgotten the question.
I was asking what the conditions would be that would allow this kind of system to work.
What really is absolutely necessary, first of all, is that the person who's done harm takes responsibility for it. Also, all parties have to be agreeable to it. And basically, those are the main requirements, is that the person takes responsibility and everyone is willing to participate.
So you've talked a little bit about how this concept could be extended and used in different situations. How could it be extended to other forms of conflict in the community, like, for example, family conflicts or neighborhood conflicts? Can you give us an example of from the East Vancouver neighborhood where this approach could be effective?
Family conflicts, I may be a little more hesitant about, although there are parent-teen programs that are facilitated programs where parents and teens can do the same sort of process to resolve some issues. Some of the things that I see in our community that would be really effective are, for example, we have issues in parks with people drinking and doing drugs, which causes a number of problems for families using the park. I could see the potential for a group of people from the neighborhood, a small group of people, having a process with the people who are drinking in the park, probably in the park itself, to just talk about what impact it has on them and their neighborhood and their families, to come to some sort of agreement about what will work for everybody. We have a very diverse community. We also have some issues between police and people more on the anarchistic side. They don't get along. And I, frankly, would be really interested in, hopefully at some point, having a meeting between those two parties to sort of at least come to understand each other's perspective in a respectful way and maybe resolve some of the issues that are there. I think there are some primary issues that start those problems, but I think in terms of managing to accept each other, I think it could be an effective thing.
How can people get involved or find out more about what you're doing?
Well, there's a couple of ways. I have an email address you can write to, which is Camia Weaver, CamiaWeaver at shaw.ca, or you can call Libby Davies' office. Libby has been very involved in this from the beginning. It's been wonderful. Her office number is 604-775-5800, and on Monday, September 19th at 6:30 on the floor above Eastside Family Place, we're having another community forum to talk about restorative justice.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Camia, for coming in and sharing this information with us.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
I've been speaking with Camia Weaver of Vancouver East Restorative Justice.
So that was an interview from 2005, a Red Eye Co-op Radio with Camilla Weaver. I'm not sure. I should have looked into it, but what the update is on how the Community Restorative Justice Project in Vancouver's Downtown East Side is going, being 6 years into the project by now. But that was just a little touching on sort of what restorative justice is and a personal tale on how one person came to become involved in it. So we're going to turn now to some public service announcements, our public duty on community radio. So we're going to turn to that with Flying Down Thunder and Rise Ashen in the background. Jay.
Yes. Chris. 2011 Kamloops Santa Claus Parade, a family tradition in the city for 31 years, will be held downtown on Saturday, November 26th, starting at 11 a.m. For more information, call the KCBIA at 250-372-3242 or visit christmastown.ca.
Excellent.
Fumble my way through that.
Right here, the True Environmental Science Seminar Series continues on Thursday, November 17th, that's tomorrow, with a presentation by Dr. John Church of Natural Resource Science, TRU. The title of the lecture is The Cow Jumped Over the Moon and Other Myths Debunked About the BC Cattle Industry. The talk will be delivered at 3:30 p.m. in the Science Building at S203. It's a free event, and everyone is welcome to attend. Go check it out.
And the time is 3:28. You're listening to CFBX 92.5 FM, www.vx.ca, or 106.1 on Shaw Cable. I'm Jay Michie, and you're listening to Loopholes. That was One Nation from the album Flying Down Thunder and Rise Ashen. The track title was Pidaban, which translates to He Who Comes Walking with the Early Morning Sun. Some interesting Aboriginal electronica. Very fitting for the topic here.
Yeah, I like that. That got me in the mood.
Yeah, Chris, so we're talking about Restorative Justice Week.
Mm-hmm.
And as a part of that, I couldn't help but to notice you were not in class for the last couple days.
Mm-hmm.
You were... well, where were you, Chris?
Well, as I was saying at the start of the show, I was at the National Restorative Justice Symposium, attending that for Monday and Tuesday.
And where exactly did this take place?
It was held this year at the Kamloops Convention Center in town. So we occupied, I keep saying the word occupy, maybe subconsciously, but so we took up a bit of that. And yeah, it was really great. I met a lot of interesting people. From all areas of the law, enforcement officers, former justices, academics, professors who speaking on different topics, lawyers, Crown Counsel. I met a lady from Crown Counsel from Vancouver. So all sorts of different people from all sorts of different areas of the law were here listening, interested in about in restorative justice.
So this is sounds like quite a party. This something that goes down in Kamloops every year? Or?
No, no, no. This the National Restorative Justice Symposium is held in a different province every year. So last year it was held in Saskatchewan, in Regina actually, and this year it was in Kamloops in BC. Next year it'll be in Winnipeg, Manitoba. So
excellent.
So yeah.
So you'd say it was an interesting experience?
Very interesting. Yeah, it was a very interesting experience. The conference opened up with keynote speaker Shannon Maroney, and she's been in the news a bit recently, talking about a book that she's recently released called Through the Glass, and she herself was involved in a process where her husband at the time had unfortunately been involved with a very violent sexual abuse. She herself was out of the town at the time, and her husband had abused two women in a health food store that he worked at, and of course this all led into a criminal process, the standard criminal process that would happen from an incident like this. And so her perspective was from being the spouse of this violent offender, and just kind of how going through this process in her position really highlighted how victimized she was, you know, and so it was a very, very touching and emotional example of how there are innocent and incidental victims of heinous crimes that happen. She was ostracized by her professional community. You know, she was on things. She's on certain council boards. She was a school counselor in her profession, and she was ostracized by her principal. She lost her job, and it wasn't to any fault of her own. It wasn't that anything that she did. It was the fact that her husband had did these things, and how, you know, how was it that she could be married to this person? There's a whole lot of judgment coming out of the process from the community directed at her, that really had a huge influence on her, and really affected her, and so. Her story is very touching. I urge you to look it up. You'll find a Globe and Mail article was written the other day about it, just in October, and there was an interview she did with the CBC. I think she was on Strombolopolis or something like that, whatever the show was called, The Hour or The Strombo Show. But it was very telling, and her story is very, very good. But the point for restorative justice that came out of it was that that there needs to be a better way to recognize the explosive the impact the damage area that flows from this kind of from an incident in the community. When something happens in the community, it's not just the victims on one hand who are affected and the accused on the other. And so there's this really good example of a comparison between what restoration is and looks like in a justice process, and what retribution looks like in a justice process. So that kicked off the conference.
Sounds like it was the highlight of the conference for you.
It certainly set the tone for the conference. Absolutely. And
so she was one of the keynote speakers.
She was, yeah. She was
Shannon Maroney.
Shannon Maroney. And the second keynote speaker I'll talk about just briefly was also a Shannon, Shannon Moore, two Shannons, both with M last names, but she was very interesting. She's a PhD, or well, she's not a PhD, she has a PhD in counseling psychology, and she's a huge academic. She's been a UN delegate, and she's spoken to the UN on behalf of different things, involved with justice and things of that nature. So she's traveled and worked in all over Europe, in Scotland and Ireland and England, and really been working on right now she's working on her, she talked about this project where she wants to combine the idea of human rights and restorative justice, and bring the two ideas together. She spoke specifically about child human rights. How Canada was really instrumental in pioneering this idea of individual children rights, a recognition of children rights. She brought up the fact that in 1989 that Canada had helped architect a what's called the Children's Rights Convention. I think it's called the Children's Rights Convention, or Children's, I can't remember now, but it's November 20th, 1989. If you look up that date in relation to the child, I had all these notes, and they're at home on my desk.
Sometimes we just have to rely on our memories.
That's right. So I'm relying on my memory. Remember the dates, and I remember sort of the brief thing. But basically, it recognized that children are special people, that they have special needs, and that we need to recognize it, that they have rights that don't necessarily reflect what is in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms here in Canada, as a case example. So so these are kind of the things that came out of that, out of her perspective on this, and that we don't necessarily reflect on how children are recognized. The first time this convention even came into effect was seen in 2003 with the Youth Criminal Justice Act, where we recognized that young offenders needed to be treated differently from adults, and she talked a little bit about how you know, given the Youth Criminal Justice Act, that the real principles of recognizing children as special people with recognized human rights hasn't really taken full effect in a legal system. So that was the second keynote speaker.
So my big question is, Chris, has your participation in this conference reignited the fire in your belly, so to speak?
It has. You know, I got it
between the doctrines and some of the academic components of law school.
That's right.
Your eyes can tend to glaze over a little bit. So
yes. Well, I think the most I guess the best quote I took out of the conference that I heard from somebody. I was sitting having lunch on Monday with somebody who had been, he was a lawyer, and he had been working in the legal system for over 30 years. He had all this experience. And the biggest thing he said to me was that we have a legal system, but we don't have a justice system. And for me, that spoke volumes about how we get caught up in process, and we get caught up in that kind of thing, and we forget sometimes exactly what we're doing, what the whole point of it is. One interesting thing that there's this one workshop given by HeartSpeak Productions, if you want to look them up. But they're doing
Heart Speak. Okay.
Heart Speak Productions. They are they're actually making a movie. They've got some money from the Law Foundation to put together a movie on this. But and they have a YouTube account, and if I had the time, I would have pulled up something from them to play over the air. But they opened up their workshop by stating that if you look at section 718 of the criminal code, and you look at some of the reasons for why we have the criminal code, it sort of states some of the reasons for the criminal justice system. They match almost exactly the restorative justice purposes of yet the effects and the outcomes are very, very different. So so something to think about anyway.
Do you plan to make the pilgrimage to Winnipeg next year?
No. As much as I love Winnipeg, I don't think I would. I don't think I could pilgrim. Maybe. This was definitely a conference for practitioners in the restorative justice field. The chance to go there as a first year law student was pretty astounding and pretty incredible. But maybe later on in my career, they are. Announcing, and this has been about 6 years. They're talking about the conference, but they are announcing a national Canadian restorative justice consortium. So a national organization starting to cobble together all of the various restorative justice organizations that are in effect both provincially and locally. So a lot of interesting stuff in terms of that. coming down the way. It's very much as I was taking away from the conference and from what people were saying about restorative justice, it's very much on the new wave front. It's although it's an ancient idea, and restorative justice can be found throughout history, and all the Romans practiced forms of restorative justice, and indigenous people have practiced forms of restorative justice. It's very much a part of our history as a civilization, but in terms of its modern sort of effect, it is very, very new in that it is contrasting or providing a need, I guess you could say, that is arising out of the way we handle our legal affairs today. So
very cool.
So yeah,
those are all my questions.
That's it. That's all you got to ask.
I think I got.
You're fully learned on restorative justice now.
I might have to go to Winnipeg next year.
Well, I don't know if it stood out too much for people in the clip we played with Camille Weaver, but I'll just give a quick rundown about sort of what restorative justice is, and as I understood it from the conference. But restorative justice is an approach to dealing with something that happens. So something that happens in the community, we'll say there's an we'll say a criminal process, for instance. If there's an offender on one side and you have the victims on the other, the offender, if he's willing to admit that he's done wrong, then the Crown in this case, the Crown Council in this case, can have this sort of case sent to a restorative justice forum, and a restorative justice practitioner at that point would begin the process of developing the research and the context and forming a circle of witnesses, or not witnesses, actually victims. So you build a community around this offender, which is very different from what happens in the criminal justice process, where you have this person who is basically, you know, every criminal case is Regina versus, I don't know, let's say Jay Mitchie committed a violation.
Like the state versus me.
Yeah, so it's the state versus you, or the Crown versus you, and that can be very intimidating, I would think. The power of all the Commonwealth against you as an offender. And that's sort of how it's set up right now, which sort of excludes any mention of the victims in the incident and whatnot. So this takes a holistic approach where it gives it a chance for the victims to sit in a circle with the offender.
More of a community focus.
Exactly, and it allows the community to sort of talk about this and come up with a resolution for it. So, and it doesn't just work in the criminal context. There's one workshop I went to where it was a conservation officer who deals with large scale environmental infractions. So there's a case out of Trail BC where Teck Cominco, very large multinational corporation involved in mining, had basically created an environmental infraction. And in that case, it's very difficult because the government could just take Tech Cominco to court, and they could spend 4 years roughly litigating and dealing with this case. The result could be a hefty fine of $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000. Who knows what the fine might be for that infraction? And it would cost close to $1 million for all the legal stuff to happen for both taxpayers and Tech on the other side. But when they went this restorative justice route, and they did this particular route because the plant in Trail, BC, Trail's this very small town, if you've ever been there. Usually you drive through it when you're driving from Calgary to the West Coast. But the majority of people in Trail work for Tech. So to have that town sort of become the victim in that sense was very controversial because on one hand, if you shut down the plant in Tech, or if you shut down the Tech plant, you sort of shut down the town of Trail. In a lot of senses. So in this case, instead of the long court process, instead of the huge skyrocketing cost of legal bills, they managed to resolve the issue in 33 days, And the end result was Tech Cominco promised to pay about $325,000 initially to cover the damages that they caused. And also there was a kickoff for another $600,000 that came out of it going towards monitoring and sustainability programs specifically in that area. So it was another way of ensuring that the cost and damages came out of that and stayed in the area that it really affected. So
lots of applications for restorative justice.
Lots of applications. Yeah. Excellent. So that's RJ in a brief nutshell. Excellent. Not very brief, but hopefully you get the idea. I urge you to look it up. Look up the National Restorative Justice Symposium if you'd like to see what was on there, or look up National Restorative Justice in general, or restorative justice processes. There's lots written about it, lots of academic work happening, and very interesting topic. Very interesting way for a justice system to emerge. So.
Excellent. That's great. I wish I had a Latin legal segment prepared to deal with that, considering that the Romans apparently practiced restorative justice. It would have been ideal had I had one prepared today, but I'm sorry to all of our faithful listeners who have been sitting here for the past 45 minutes waiting to hear that Jay's Latin legal segment. I have to admit that I have come unprepared today, and I'm not going to just dilute that segment by coming up with anything willy-nilly. I have too much respect for Latin legal segment to just do that. So.
Well, that's okay. We can always do our public duty and read some more public service announcements.
Oh, I've got one.
All right. Let's hear it.
No, you got one first?
Sure, I'll kick it off.
All right.
All right. An opportunity to support Habitat for Humanity and enjoy an evening out at the same time is coming up on Sunday, November 20th. From 5 to 8 p.m. that day, Habitat is joining forces with the Fox and Hounds Pub in Sahali Center Mall to offer a steak, salmon, or chicken dinner with salad and potato for only $10 per person. The price is right for singles, couples, and groups, and proceeds support a most worthwhile cause. Tickets are available now at Habitat's Restore at Unit 28, 1425 Caribou Road, just past Sun Country Toyota, or by calling Neil at 250-554-9407.
What's the date on that one?
Sunday, November 20th.
Oh,
this
great.
Sunday.
Excellent. Well, I've got one here for Friday and Saturday. The Council of Canadians Kamloops Chapter is hosting its 14th annual 10,000 Villages Fair Trade Craft Fair at Desert Gardens, 540 Seymour Street, on Friday and Saturday, November 18th and 19th. Please note the move to a new venue. The sale is held to raise awareness of fair and free trade issues in the world, as well as to make it possible to people to purchase gifts with a clear conscience regarding the source of these products. This year, the event features Esperanza Castillo, manager of a Peruvian Women's Fair Trade Cooperative, who has been brought to the city by Fair Trade Kamloops. Hours are noon to 6 p.m. on Friday and 10 to 4 on Saturday.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Jay.
Well, thank you, Chris. Got a groovy tune for us?
Yes, I do. As always, you're listening to CFBX 92.5 FM. This is Loopholes. But we do have a tune for you. Very fitting for the weather outside. This is Angel in the Snow by Elliot Smith. Go out and make some snow angels.
Better stop for goes too far. Don't you know that I love you? Sometimes I feel like only a cold still light that fell down here to lay beside you. Cold still lie, only a frozen still lie that fell down here to lay beside you.